This happened many years ago, but still brings a smile every time I recall it. In the early 1980s, I was serving the UU Church in Rockland, Maine, and I would have occasion to go over to Augusta, the state capital, from time to time. Augusta is about 40 miles inland from coastal Rockland. On one of those trips, I stopped by the Augusta UU Church to visit with a friend and colleague who was the minister there at the time. As I left the church and crossed the street to where my car was parked, I noticed a woman about a half a block away walking towards me. She was close enough for me to recognize her as someone I served with on the board of directors of the local community mental health center in the Rockland area. Her name was Connie. I decided I would wait until she got a little closer to where my car was and we could have a chit-chat. Well, as she got closer, I noticed she had kind of a dazed and glazed look on her face, to the point that she wasn't even aware that I was standing there waiting for her to come up. And when she finally got about 10 feet away and was still not showing any sign of recognizing me, still didn't even seem to know that I was standing there, I said, "Hey, Connie, what's up?" My words had the effect of snapping her out of a trance. She stared at me with these very wide eyes and practically yelled out, "Steve, what are you doing here?" I was so startled, I actually began to explain myself. Well, you see, there's this church over here, and the minister's a friend of mine, and I was just talking to him, and then I was walking back to my car, at which point I stopped, and we both realized how ridiculous we both sounded, and then she told me her story. She was a very active lay leader in her local Episcopal church in Camden, Maine, which is a tiny little town about 10 miles further up the coast from Rockland, and she had come over to Augusta for a meeting of a committee she served on for the Episcopal Diocese of Maine. As she was leaving town, her car conked out on her. She had it towed to the local dealership for the make of car it was, only to be told it needed a part that would take them a day or two to get, and they didn't have any loaners available. Her husband was out of town on a business trip, and the call she'd made in an attempt to reach anyone over in Camden who might come to her rescue went unanswered. This was back in the dark ages, also known as the pre-cell phone era. In addition, the last bus from Augusta had gone over, that went over to the coast had already left. Feeling completely out of options, Connie just started wandering down the nearest street in something of a fog about what to do next when she almost literally walked right into me. I'm being rather nonchalant about the whole thing myself, and I just said, "Well, hop in, I'll drive you over to Camden on my way home." "You can drive me home?" "Sure, we don't live that far apart. I'd be glad to take you over. Hop in, let's go." Not quite believing what was happening to her, she got in the car. We headed out of town. In just a matter of a few short minutes, my friend had gone from feeling completely high and dry and stranded to being in a car that was going to take her right straight to her house. For the first minute or two of our trip, she just sat there in a kind of contemplative silence, processing all that had just happened, before finally blurting out, "Steve, now I know it's true. There really is a God." Would not have been a very good outcome to either Connie's stroke of fortune or to me either. And when I got over my laughing fit, I said, "Connie, this is really too rich. You're a long-time faithful devoted Episcopalian. It takes a chance beat up with the Unitarian Universalist minister to finally convince you of the existence of God." We were both able to appreciate the humor and the irony in that, and less than an hour later, I dropped her off in front of her home in Camden, headed down the coast to my home in Rockland. Apparently, that whole experience made such an impression on her that for the next few weeks, Connie told all of her friends about it, to the point that anyone I happened to meet up with for some time after that and who knew the two of us would say, "Hey, heard that story about you meeting Connie over there in Camden and giving her a ride home." For a short stretch of time, it seemed like we had become part of the local folklore of Mid-Coast Maine. Well, one of the occupational hazards of the career I've chosen is I can take the most whimsical of events and go get all theological about it. So consider yourself warned, because that's what I'm about to do. The fact of the matter is that had I come out of that church 5 minutes earlier or 5 minutes later than I did, the two of us would have never met up beside my car. I'm sure my friend, resourceful person that she was, would have eventually figured out a way to have gotten herself home. I just happened to catch her when she'd been momentarily kind of knocked off base or momentarily kind of knocked out of kilter, and she was trying to get her bearings, and in the midst of trying to get her bearings, she just happened to walk into me. And I'm sure as well that part of her exclamation that there is a God was an expression of relief, joy, and thankfulness that she'd been bailed out of a tough and unexpected situation by doing nothing more than walking down a city street. But in addition to being profusely grateful to me, almost to the point of embarrassment on my part, she also felt the need to acknowledge, and we talked about this a little bit, she felt the need to acknowledge the workings of some greater being or power, and to be thankful on that level as well, to offer a cosmic thank you, if you will. So what I took, what I still take actually, to be a purely coincidental meetup, was for her an indication of a greater hand at work, in her case, the hand of God, which gave her an unexpected gift and blessing, even if it was delivered by a Unitarian Universalist minister for whom the idea of a supreme being is somewhat questionable. Well, I'm not going to get into the question of which one of us is right. On that one, I defer to the wisdom of Bob Dylan and his song, One Too Many Mornings. You're right from your side, and I am right from mine. Mr. Dylan, incidentally, is going to be in Lowell at a concert this coming Saturday. I have my ticket, for which I paid way too much. What are you going to do? It's Bob Dylan. I mean, yeah, you move on. That's what I do right now, and we move on. We move into a season of Thanksgiving. As this time of year approaches, every now and then I'll have some of my more theistic-minded, so my non-UU friends give me a little good-natured ribbing by saying something like, well, Thanksgiving must be a pretty challenging time for you since you really don't have anyone to thank. I've actually had that said to me. But I have to admit, it's one of those kind of UU jokes I get a little weary of hearing after a while. It's one of those jokes with an edge to it. The edge being somehow you're not properly or really celebrating Thanksgiving unless you're offering prayers of thanks to a supreme being giver who has purposefully bestowed your blessings, especially the unexpected ones, upon you. As with my friend in Maine, I feel no need to argue the point behind the bar or to question the faith of those making it. Instead, I try to stay more focused on cultivating my own kind of faith instead. For like my friend Connie, I do feel a need from time to time, and this is what I was very briefly talking with the kids about a little earlier, I do feel a need from time to time to offer what I'm calling a cosmic thank you. As I hope is the case with each of you from time to time, I have my moments when life feels especially full for me, and when I simply need to say thank you for the life I have. Who or what I am saying thank you to really doesn't matter that much to me. I prefer instead to allow myself to feel blessed by a cloud of mystery, a cloud of wonder, sometimes a cloud of awe, over which I have little, if any, control, but in whose presence I feel nonetheless. And when I get into this frame of mind, I find I'm drawn back to some very wise words by the late Reverend Raymond Bond, the Unitarian Universalist minister of many years. Among the words of wisdom he offered during his ministry are these: giving thanks has nothing to do with who or what produced the gift. It is rather a way of perceiving our life. Even in the midst of hurt and disappointment, when we see ourselves in a universe that gives us life and touches us with love, we praise. Well, that sure works for me. Thank you, Raymond. My prayer of thanksgiving, then, is not one directed to a deity. Rather, it is my way of perceiving life. Even when life hurts, wounds, disappoints, frustrates, or angers me. Such a prayer is really more of an attempt, an ongoing attempt, to cultivate an attitude of gratitude than it is words addressed to a supreme being. Such thankfulness, again, is a way of perceiving life and a way of seeing ourselves in a universe that gives us life, and in which we find love and care and inspiration. It is cultivating this kind of an awareness, which being human is an awareness I fall in and out of, but it is trying to cultivate this ongoing kind of awareness that constitutes my cosmic thank you. To Ray Bond's words, I would add those of the 14th century German mystic and theologian Meister Eckhart, which also gives us our sermon title for today. Eckhart once said, if the only prayer you ever say in your whole life is thank you, that would suffice. That would suffice. Indeed, that would suffice. Now, Eckhart was a Dominican priest who had to endure several charges of heresy over the course of his life for maintaining that one could experience the divine directly without intercessors like the medieval church, for instance. The fact that the church considered such an idea a heresy most likely meant that Father Eckhart was speaking the truth. He was one of those persons of faith, one of those persons of faith who arise over the ages, who can stay grounded in their own faith, but also who can look beyond the particulars of their faith to certain larger and universal truths. If the only prayer you ever say in your life is thank you, that would suffice. Like Ray Bond, Eckhart is speaking more about an attitude or a stance towards living than he is about the content of what a prayer of thanksgiving should contain or to whom it might be addressed. To simply and profoundly encounter one of those special moments of blessings in our lives is to offer Eckhart's prayer of thanksgiving, even if no words are spoken at all. Well, while I'm on the subject of medieval Catholic mystics with a strong heretical streak, I can also hold up Julian of Norwich. She lived in England about a century prior to Eckhart's time in Germany. And as you know, she gave us the words that are the basis for the second choir anthem we heard today, beautifully heard today. As shown in your order of service, Julianne's words are adapted by Sidney Carter, the musical arrangement by one of our members and friends, Ed Stock. Julian lived a hermit-like, contemplative life within the church of Norwich, England. In fact, she spent most of her life kind of meditating in a little cell-like place in the church there. She wrote what is believed to have been the first book written by a woman in the English language, titled 16 Revelations of the Divine. Anticipating our own universalist forebears by a few centuries, she held that God was the source and embodiment of universal love, and that there was no hell. Julian also believed God was really a divine she, not a he, and she compared Jesus to a wise, merciful, and loving mother. Like Eckhart, she too saw beyond the bounds of her own faith to its more universal implications and meanings. Julian and Eckhart were both prolific writers, at least by the standards of their day, and like Eckhart, Julian of Norwich has one particular line for which she is especially noted and remembered. She said it came to her from God in one of her mystical visions in which she, that is to say God, said to her, that is to say Julian, all shall be well, and all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well. Lady Julian, as she was also called, lived in England during one of the more virulent outbreaks of the Black Plague, when people really did drop like flies, to the point that in cities there was a crisis as to what to do with the bodies, so they couldn't all be properly buried. Instead, they had to be carted off en masse, dumped in these big pits on the outside of the towns. It might seem almost blasphemous in that kind of a setting to speak the words, all shall be well, and all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well, and attribute them to a loving and maternal God. And yet these simple words have endured over the centuries, finding their way, among other places, into the poetry of T.S. Eliot and into songs like the one we heard earlier. And like Eckhart's, they strike a universal chord. As I read them and ponder over them, I hardly think that Lady Julian was trying to say everything is always hunky-dory. All she had to do was look around her, as she surely must have done, to know that wasn't the case. What I take from these words as I read them through my religious humanist lens, is the affirmation that life and love, with capital L's, are ultimately stronger and more resilient than death and despair and hatred, however much these latter things may seem to hold sway at any given time. Lady Julian's words are also a call to those who hear them and who get their message to hold fast to that which is good, to practice kindness, and to stand on the side of love. All shall be well, all shall be well, and all manner of things shall be well. If the only prayer you ever say in your life is thank you, that would suffice. I suggest you take these words and these sentiments into the season of Thanksgiving that is now before us and see what message that I offer you. To stay with this thread for just a bit longer, I'll come back to our Unitarian Universalist family, Roy Vaughan, once more before closing. He writes of being thankful even in the midst of hurt and disappointment. Yes, hurt and disappointment and the pain of loss are realities we come up against as much, if not more regularly, than our thank you moments. In fact, it seems we live in the push and the pull between Eckhart's thank you and Julian's all shall be well on the one hand, and all those things that diminish or demean or cheapen life on the other. Such is the tension in which we have to live. And in that tension, there are some certain and some simple truths I find worth holding on to. I state them personally while knowing and hoping they reach beyond me. However much it may have been given me, I'm living the only life I have, during the only time given me to live it, and on the only earth and in the only universe I have in which to live it. What other choices do we have, really, but to accept these truths and live with them and ultimately say yes to them? We are aware of the unfinished and unhealed parts of the world in which we live, just as we're aware of the unfinished and unhealed parts of our lives, but we must still give thanks. If ours were not a life and a world for which we can give thanks, why would we care about our life? Why would we care about our world in the first place? To say thank you and all shall be well then is not to approve or even accept all that comes your way or all that gets visited upon you. Rather, it is to take and face all that life gives us and then, using the will, the resources, the power of the human spirit, we can become agents of transformation. We become agents of transformation for ourselves, for those with whom we are in community here, to a world that stands in need of our care. As already noted, we now approach a season whose themes are Thanksgiving, in-gathering, and harvest. I hope we can use some portion of that time, however hectic it may get, for some reflection, for some discernment, for commitment, for rededication. Let us reflect in the days ahead on the content of our lives and the times in which we live in. We live in very bountiful and very troubling times all at the same time, probably within our own lives, within the world in which we live. Let us be mindful of what our yes and what our thank you and what our all shall be well mean. Let us be well aware as well as to what these words call us. But we are the meaning makers. We are the bearers of life and life abundant. If that is, we can strongly believe it enough. It is not then so much who we thank, but how we offer our thanks. How we offer our thanks to a world that needs our energy, our spirit, our generosity, and our commitment, and moving us closer to that day when earth shall be fair and all her people one. Let's sing together hymn number 322. Thanks be for these.